stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting. Syrian rebels ready for truce, but only if. Syria's main opposition group says it is ready for a temporary truce, but only if Russia and the Damascus government also observe a ceasefire and halt all fighting in the war-torn country. Russia has previously said it will not stop its airstrikes against what it calls terrorist targets in Syria, even if there is international agreement on a temporary truce. The U.S. and others involved in trying to end the Syrian civil war say most Russian bombs are directed at rebels fighting the Syrian government and not against Islamic State terrorists. Russia also says it regrets the rejection of its draft resolution at the United Nations that had called for Turkey to end its military action in Syria. The Kremlin made the announcement Saturday, saying Russia continued with its consistent, transparent, and clear policy aimed at securing stability and combating terrorism. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni was declared the winner in this week's election in Uganda. Jill Craig has details from Kampala.
Uganda's Electoral Commission Chairman, Badru Kigundu, announced Saturday afternoon that President Yoweri Museveni had been re-elected president of Uganda, an announcement that pleased National Resistance Movement supporters like 58-year-old Sarah Opondo.
I'm very happy, very, very happy, extremely happy, because I like the president.
A view not shared by others, who supported opposition candidate Kizza Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change Party.
I'm not really sure if the elections were free and fair.
According to the Electoral Commission, Museveni garnered 60.75% of the final vote. Besigye captured 35.37%, and independent candidate Amama Mbabazi took 1.43%. Jill Craig, VOA News, Kampala.
This is VOA News. Serbia's foreign minister says two Serbian embassy staff members held hostage in Libya since November were killed in yesterday's U.S. airstrike on an Islamic State training camp in western Libya. Foreign Minister Ivica Dačić made the announcement in a news conference in Belgrade on Saturday. Mr. Dačić said they were taken hostage in November when their diplomatic convoy, including the Serbian ambassador, came under fire near the coastal Libyan city of Sabratha. British Prime Minister David Cameron announced Saturday that a referendum on Britain's continued membership in the European Union will take place on June 23rd. Lisa Bryant is in the UK and has this.
After 2 days of haggling with fellow European Union leaders to reach the deal, British Prime Minister David Cameron says he will campaign to stay in the 28-member bloc.
This deal has delivered on the commitments I made at the beginning of this renegotiation process. Britain will be permanently out of ever closer union, never part of a European superstate. There will be tough new restrictions on access to our welfare system for EU migrants, no more something for nothing. Britain will never join the euro, and we've secured vital protections for our economy.
The agreement for renegotiating Britain's EU membership was struck late Friday. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
For more on this story, visit our website at voanews.com. The Nigerian army has established an Office of Human Rights at its headquarters in the capital of Abuja to continue training officers about the need to respect the rights of citizens in the ongoing fight against Islamic insurgent group Boko Haram and other terrorist groups. This according to high-ranking officials of the Army, including the Army Chief of Staff, who met with Amnesty International about concerns that the rights organization raised in its recent report. The report accused the Nigerian Army of gross human rights violations in the fight against Boko Haram militants in parts of Nigeria's north. Residents of areas attacked by Boko Haram militants often accuse the soldiers of human rights violations. The military usually denies the accusation. Thousands of mourners attended a Roman Catholic funeral mass today for the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Lauded as a giant of the law and the most influential justice of his era, the life of Justice Scalia, who was deeply religious, was celebrated in the country's largest Roman Catholic church, the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, a short distance from the Supreme Court building on Capitol Hill. Many senior political and government officials, including Vice President Joe Biden, attended the service for Justice Scalia, who died 1 week ago at age 79. This is Joe Palca reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Announcing at the data center at the national level are inconsistent with the results that were even declared.
Uganda's main opposition party rejects the outcome of the election after President Yoweri Museveni was declared winner in last Thursday's poll.
We realized in one of the seminars that there was a need to have a human rights check, kind of a contact person to interface with allegations of human rights abuses.
After years of accusations of right abuses, the Nigerian Army establishes a new office for human rights at the military headquarters in the capital, Abuja.
They were only staying in their military camps, but now that they have decided to help us with school benches, we know they have our interests at heart.
And U.S. troops deployed to help fight Boko Haram insurgency have donated school benches and educational material to Cameroonian schools. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Uganda's main opposition party, the Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, has rejected the outcome of the election, saying it was neither free nor fair. This after the chairman of the Electoral Commission, Badru Kigundu, declared incumbent President Yoweri Museveni winner of the presidential vote with 60.07% of the total vote cast, while main challenger Dr. Jisa Besigye came in second with 35.37%. But the chairman of the FDC, Mugisha Muntu, told me the election was fraught with vote tampering and other voter irregularities aimed at ensuring Mr. Museveni's re-election.
Well, the correct side was really quite fraudulent. And when the results they are announcing, the commission itself, I believe the chairperson should really know that the results they are announcing at the target center at the national level are inconsistent with the results that were even declared by their own officials at the lower levels, like at the polling stations, because from the declaration forms that we are getting from quite a number of areas, you see clear inconsistencies between the two.
Are you therefore saying that the results that are gotten from the polling stations have been changed or tampered with when it is announced by the Electoral Commission, when it's tabulated or tallied at the Electoral Center in Kampala?
Yeah, the one at the national level certainly has been tampered with, there's no doubt about that.
Does the FDC have proof of this?
Yes, yeah, from the yesterday, that's what made it difficult for us even to meet. They bust our headquarters yesterday. This morning, we couldn't even, we were in a meeting, I mean, it's a meeting, that's when and we were arrested and we were leaving to bed late last night. This morning we attempted to have another meeting again and we were not able to access the candidate today. And however, we at technical level, our tiring is still going on and we will still come out with the results, with the proof of the declaration forms that would be able to offer evidence.
The EU poll observer mission has come up with a statement that the Electoral Commission was not independent and that the election was held in an intimidating circumstances. What is your party's reaction to that?
And it's so evident. Anybody who doesn't read the same conclusion must be having a problem.
So what are you telling your supporters? Because the reaction of the FDC towards the election could spark protests from your supporters. What are you telling them at this moment?
We're trying to have meetings still and determine the way forward. We'll be communicating to our party supporters. One thing that we can say for sure, which is nothing new to our party supporters, is that the exercise is fraudulent. Because we are getting a lot of calls, even from parts of the country, from people who are at the polling stations, where results will be announced, and then they hear at the national level different deals being announced.
Have you made contact with officials of the international and local poll observers to express your concern about this?
Yeah, over a period of time, they have been briefed. Except now, and after the reading of the final results, of course, it's becoming so short. It's just been done a short while back. There hasn't been any contact yet.
Have you been able to reach your candidate, Dr. Chisa Besigye?
No, it was not possible for me and other leaders to access him until up to now.
Mugisha Muntu is the chairman of Uganda's main opposition party, Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. Meanwhile, observer missions in Uganda released their findings of the 2016 electoral process Saturday, finding overall that the elections suffered from democratic shortcomings while still remaining largely peaceful. VOA's Joe Craig has more from Kampala.
Election observers from the African Union, European Union, the Commonwealth, and the Electoral Institute for Sustainable Democracy in Africa, among others, released their preliminary findings Saturday in Kampala before the final Ugandan election announcement was made. Former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo led the Commonwealth Observer Mission to Uganda and said that while the presidential elections were competitive with regard to the number of candidates, freedom of movement and assembly affected the fairness of the campaign for opposition candidates.
These elections fell short of meeting some key democratic benchmarks, namely the increased prevalence of money in politics, the misuse of state resources, which led to significant advantages for the incumbent, and the competence, credibility, and ability of the Electoral Commission to manage the process effectively and impartially.
Ghanaian Supreme Court Justice and head of the African Union Observer Mission, Sophia Akufo, says the delays in ballot papers arriving at polling stations was quite inexcusable. But she also says she was impressed by Ugandan voters.
I commend them for their patience and their fortitude and their determination to exercise their votes, because it was hot, humid, and very, very confusing at some of the polling stations that we went to. And of course, the materials were late.
Rupia Banda, the leader of the EISA mission and former president of Zambia, urged for stronger electoral provisions to guard against the use of inflammatory and intimidating language during the campaign.
As an African, I want to underline this very point of inflammatory language. We just have to learn to express ourselves without showing bitterness and anger, be it by government authorities or leaders or those prepared to participate in the elections.
The observer missions expect to later release their final reports. Jill Craig, VOA News, Kampala.
For more on the latest update of the elections in Uganda, my colleague Douglas Mpuga reached Charles Mwanguhia, Communications Director for Citizens Coalition for Electoral Democracy.
Kampala is largely quiet, very few people on the streets. Unlike previous times, I haven't seen celebrations following the declaration of the winner, partly because of the tensions that followed the election day and the day after elections, which was yesterday, Friday, when we saw police deploy at the main opposition party, Forum for Democratic Change, arrest the leader, the main opposition leader, Dr. Kizza Besigye, and some of his top officials. They were detained until into the night and then released late in the night and taken. Besigye has been held under virtual house arrest since yesterday when he was moved from a police holding facility back to his home. So Kampala is largely deserted. It's very quiet. The streets are very quiet. You can drive at any seat without any fear. Some people have been joking that you can drive when closing your eyes and move through the streets. So there's very little traffic.
So what's the people's reactions, especially the opposition supporters, and as far as the house arrest of Dr. Kizza Besigye?
There is hardly any reaction, largely because social media and messaging applications have been shut down on like Twitter, Facebook, WhatsApp. People were trying to bypass that process, But many of them are quickly beginning to run out of what we call here MBs or megabytes to be able to continue communication. And yet, mobile money is not working. Many people are used to buying airtime for their phones using mobile money. Mobile money is still shut down. A few banks operated, many didn't operate today, being a Saturday, and those few that operated closed at 1 o'clock. So I think money is not very much available. Communication has been disrupted significantly. And then secondly, there is quite a reasonable deployment around the streets of Kampala by both the military and the police, and that's helping to keep many people off the streets. Kampala almost is like a ghost town, if you would want me to put it that way.
Kizabes ran a campaign of what he called a campaign of defiance. Most of the things he complained about, some of them have come true, like election malpractices. How do you think he'll carry forward his defiance?
I think by the results that have been declared by the Electoral Commission today, people, his supporters, seemed to grow in number, seemed to agree with his message of defiance. They supported him because largely the message was disrupted quite significantly throughout the last 5 years since he got contested of the results declared by the Electoral Commission. He's won in the capital, Kampala. He's won in the neighboring, also equally urbanized, Wakiso district. And these have the largest number of people. He's not only won himself as a presidential candidate, they have virtually wiped out any representation in parliament from Kampala City. Now, depending on how President Yoweri Museveni and the National Resistance Movement deal with this reality will determine how Besigye plays. I think engagement will be more important, but I suspect that he will not accept one to be continually held in his home. He'll try to come out, and when he comes out, his supporters will follow him, and when they follow him, the police and the military will deploy, and then you expect that most likely you'll have a return to what we saw in 2011, which was the walk-to-work protest.
Charles Mwanguhia is the Communications Director for Citizens Coalition for Electoral Democracy. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpoga from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. The Nigerian Army has established an Office of Human Rights at its headquarters in the capital, Abuja, to continue training officers about the need to respect the rights of citizens in the ongoing fight against Islamic insurgent group Boko Haram and other terrorist groups. This after Amnesty International's report accused the Nigerian Army of gross human rights violations in the fight against Boko Haram. Military spokesman Colonel Sani Kukashika Usman told me the Army respects the rights of all citizens.
Proactive measures were taken, you know, reaching out to all stakeholders and giving training. For instance, we started contacting the National Human Rights Commission and, of course, the Nigerian Bar Association, where we have held seminars apart from our officers going on training. And we realized in one of the seminars that there was a need to have a human rights desk, kind of a contact person to interface with allegations of human rights abuses by our officers or soldiers. And Thursday, we were able to establish one at the Army headquarters for the time being. But of course, with modern technology, you don't even need to be in the midst of civilians. But we are making effort really to move it to outside the barracks or military environment so that people will feel free at will to be submitting their complaints whenever things arise. So that is the essence of the human rights deck that was established by the Nigerian Army.
How significant is the establishment of this office? And will there be ongoing training of Nigeria military or army personnel to ensure that during operations, human rights violations do not occur?
That is very, very important in the sense that we cherish and respect human rights, regardless of the fact that we are kind of fighting the terror group, Boko Haram terrorism. But regardless of that, there were established rules and regulations, you know, rules of engagement and codes of conduct in the conduct in the course of performing our duties. And apart from that, also, we have been training officers and soldiers both locally and abroad, especially in Italy. There is a specialized school that teaches humanitarian law and other issues related to human rights. And beyond that, we have also included the teaching of human rights and humanitarian law in all our training schools. And we have also open liaison with the Nigerian Human Rights Commission and the Nigerian Bar Association. So the significance of this Human Rights Office of the Nigerian Army is to interface. And, of course, it's a kind of point of contact for anybody who feels aggrieved or see things that were not right, that borders on human rights abuses by our officers or soldiers, either collectively or individually. So it is really important because we cherish that and we wish to have more feedback from the public. The whole essence of it is to enhance our performance, especially as regards to respect and protection of human rights, either in peacetime or during wartime or during operations.
Some people say that they expect a little bit of resistance from the frontline army personnel who particularly go after what they call the bad guys or terrorists, and in that they have been doing things in a certain way for all this while. Now they are being trained and being cautioned to be respectful of the rights and not to violate those of the citizens. How do you address this?
It is not a question of now. That has always been there. But somehow you have people that commit one crime or the other, especially as regards to human rights. But the rules and regulations are there for all to respect. And you know, Boko Haram terrorists have been one of the most brutal terror groups we ever had in human history. But that notwithstanding, we have been treating both, Boko Haram terrorist suspects and the victims with respect and dignity humanly possible.
Will there be an education of the Nigerian citizens in the areas of your operation when you are pursuing these terrorist groups, as you describe, in terms of how they will engage with the military and report any kinds of rights abuses in these instances?
Yeah, there are. We have been talking to opinion leaders. We have also, in our own way, sensitizing the public. You know, like with the establishment of the human rights desk, it is not just enough in the Army headquarters. It is going down up to the various formations and units of the Nigerian Army so that the public will be aware. And if anybody has any complaint about human rights abuses, we'll definitely lay that complaint before the interface person or the point of contact.
Colonel Sani Kukashika Usman is the spokesman for the Nigerian military. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. U.S. troops deployed to Cameroon to help fight the Boko Haram insurgency have donated school benches and educational material to Cameroonian schools. Cameroonians have been expressing satisfaction, saying that troops have shown interest in their immediate well-being. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from Yaoundé.
Hundreds of teachers and school children have gathered at the government primary school near the 301 Cameroon Military Air Force base in the northern town of Garoua to receive school benches, chalk, exercise books, pens and pencils from U.S. troops assisting Cameroon in its fight against Boko Haram insurgents. Among the curious observers is Nana Mamudu, whose three children attend the school. He says he now believes the American troops are interested in their well-being.
We do not know what the Americans were doing here. They were only staying in their military camp. But now that they have decided to help us with school benches, we know they have our interests at heart.
Cameroon Air Force Colonel Evina Bartholomé Marie says after they helped the community to build the school, American troops detached to Garoua agreed to provide some furniture and help community leaders encourage children to go to school.
We are struggling with parents to fix the school. We have already done it. Problem we had, it was a problem of desk. And as American people provide us some desk, we are very grateful.
Last year, Cameroon announced it had closed at least 200 schools on its northern border with Nigeria that have suffered frequent Boko Haram attacks. Many students have sought education in safer localities in the Central African nation's hinterlands, thereby exerting pressure on infrastructure and adding to some already congested schools. A United Nations report published last December said the Boko Haram insurgency in Chad, Cameroon, Nigeria, Niger, and other countries has led to the destruction of schools and infrastructure and contributed to about 1 million children being deprived of education. Roberto Quiroz, public relations officer at the United States Embassy in Cameroon, says U.S. troops came to help because of U.S. interest in the well-being of all children and in recognition of Cameroon's efforts to eradicate the terrorist group.
President Obama talks about the future of Africa. He remembers that every child has great value and every child deserves a great opportunity for the future. We have seen that Cameroon has taken a very brave stand with courage to fight Boko Haram. And the United States is here to support that leadership, support that vision, to support those efforts that are made by Cameroonians.
U.S. troops have been helping Cameroon fight Boko Haram by providing intelligence, war equipment, and training its soldiers. In March 2015, Cameroon launched an $8 million emergency plan to construct schools in safer localities away from volatile areas overrun by Boko Haram. The government said it still needed more support to cope with increasing school demands. There are concerns that lack of education may fuel radicalism, especially now that Boko Haram is recruiting child suicide bombers. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
An experimental blood test could diagnose people who have tuberculosis, separating out those with active TB from those with the latent form. The test is easier than current methods for detecting the lung disease and has the potential to find and treat many more people. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Each year, 9.6 million people become infected with tuberculosis. 1.5 million of them die. The rest will silently carry the bacterium in a latent state, with the constant threat that it could become active TB. It's estimated that one-third of the world's population is infected with TB, and the active cases are difficult to diagnose. Purvesh Khatri, a computational immunologist who analyzes data on TB infections, says there are limitations to the current diagnostic test, which uses sputum, which is coughed up from a person's respiratory tract. While it's highly accurate looking for the presence of the TB bacterium in mucus, it's hard to perform on some people.
The problem is that it requires sputum, and the children cannot cough up sputum.
In addition, the traditional test can't distinguish patients with active TB from those who have recovered from tuberculosis and people who've received the BCG tuberculosis vaccine. Also, it can be hard to detect TB in those infected with the virus that causes AIDS. So in 2014, the World Health Organization challenged researchers to develop a simple blood test to easily diagnose and sort out those who have latent disease from those who have active TB. Khatri and his colleagues at Stanford University in California have done just that, creating a highly accurate blood test that could be performed in resource-poor countries where new infections are common. When someone becomes infected with active TB, it sets off a chain reaction of activity in hundreds of genes. The blood test developed by Khatri and colleagues identifies three genes that respond in a consistent pattern when the disease becomes active. In a study published in the journal The Lancet Respiratory Medicine, the Stanford scientists report the results of the test in 1,400 blood samples. It correctly diagnosed 86% of the samples from children with active TB, and the test was accurate in 99% of cases where there was no active disease. Khatri says the blood test may also be used in another way.
We may be able to use this same signature as whether the patient is responding to treatment or not.
Researchers next plan to conduct a clinical trial in Brazil to see how well the blood test works in the real world with people who have been exposed to tuberculosis. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Plotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. It's now time for music from our African collection. Enjoy.
Sweet something, you all I want. Can't tell me nothing, stole my heart. I press God that he made you. See nobody, nobody replace you. So tell me, how you seen her? African queen, number one diva. Shake your pretty bum ting when I pump speaker. Don't you know we run things in a Tanzania? Oh, da 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 da. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Oh mama, you go make me sing. Oh na na imba. Give me thanks and praise. Feeling your embrace. You my everything. One and only queen. Hey, 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 hey. Oh, oh, oh. Anytime in any place. When I'm looking to your eyes. For I am good na yona. Pressure na ni 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 my. I swear you did make me sing. Singing every day. Give me thanks and praise. Feeling your embrace. You're my everything. One and only queen. Hey, 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 hey. Oh, oh, oh. Anytime in any place.
We fresh and clean. You want something, then chop my money up. Ah, yeah. No long time I invite you to my bedroom party, oh. Take a shot and pop the bubbly. Glasses up, you got the loving. Break it down, we then make yellow sweat like cardio. Ah, you the queen of my kingdom. Number one in a million. About time I put a ring on. Bad girls got the eyes on my income. No stress or drama. Job bless us and dishonor.
You can make me see.
Be my brother senti sina merudi tanale Kishindwa kulipa bima nimeuza madare Radio nyimbo amezima TV ndio hatare Umeneja umebaki jina nitaki atatale Walishabiki zangu waloni sifu kwa maneno matamu Leo madui zangu nimitusi tu kwa Instagramu Kimwana stadangu etina yanifamu Hata mwana izinki mpigia ananifokea kama salamu Na magazete nyumbani kwa kukuza bari Sunachuaga Utasikia tafarani ya timondi kwa zari Ame mwagu Na venye nilivo mnyonge tabia ya kwa jibu Sinaga Kama na yona michambo mademu wa zamani Unapitiaga Na yosema ya na mana Sababu wakuna naijua kesho Anepanga nirabana Hila naificha ni confidential Ukisali omba sana Umeunisije kwa kite kesho Mana rafiki wa jana Ndiyo adui mkubwa kesho Tama, tadiriki atajapo kuniposti Pindi show zimekwama Nankipata sijasi ni mikosi Moja zilmesama Mwala ni nusuru baba Kama na mwana mwanangu Roo yangu, tifada ngote Anakwenda na mamangu Kwa magufuri anafukuzu watoki Usilie sandrangu Mwani yangu, jikaze usichoki Wenda kesho za moyangu Tavuma tena mambo ya nyoke hey. Na magazete nyumbani kwa kukuza bari Sunajuaga Utasikia tafarani ya timondi kwa zari Ame mwagwa Na venye nilivo mnyonge tabia ya kwa jibu Sinaga Kama na yona michamba mademu wa zamani ya nikeke Usilie sandrangu, mwani yangu, jikaze usichoki Wenda kesho za mwangu, tafuma tena mambo ya nyoki hey. Oh la la lila Oh baby Yankees Morento Sema ya na mana Sababu wakuna naijua kesho Anepanga ni rabana La mificha ni confidential Ukisali omba sana Umeunisije kwa kiche kesho Mana rafiki wajana Niyo adui mkubwa kesho
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Nyang.
Hello, Africa. It's always a pleasure to share my reflections on U.S. policy towards the continent of Africa. At the same time, I pay close attention to African opinions on an attitude toward the United States. This week, a number of issues are taking place around the world, and of course, what affects the United States political process directly or indirectly affects all other countries because of the nature of America's role in world politics. At the same time, if you are looking for African opinions on an attitude toward the United States, these developments have consequences in relationships. This week, the question of elections is in the minds of many people in the United States as well as in Africa. The African countries are going to have elections, and they are watching the United States as Americans are moving towards an election in November. The crisis of elections now is in Uganda. The whole question of tenure, long service, and great debate among the people with regard to continuity and discontinuity in politics. Uganda is the big question with regard to change of leadership, political stability, and political continuity. There are a number of issues people are looking at with regard to what is happening in Uganda, because it has consequences for all the neighboring countries as well as the whole of Africa. And what brings the Uganda elections to the forefront is the involvement of U.S. policymakers with regard to what is going on. The Secretary of State of the United States was very much involved in the last debates over elections in Nigeria. The State Department worked very hard to see how they could help the Nigerians as they were going through a difficult elections. And of course, it turned out peacefully. And there was a concession speech from former President Jonathan and a new president in the person of Muhammad Buhari, former leader of the country 3 years ago, and now elected democratically as the president of Nigeria. That role of the State Department was attempted during the elections in Uganda, and people are still waiting for how the leadership in Uganda and the politicians who are opposed to the government, as well as the leadership, are going to really resolve their problems. The U.S. government decided to get its citizens who are in Uganda, fearing that some unfortunate development could jeopardize the life of Americans in that country. And this was true in many other parts of the world. When you have a state of emergency in a country, when elections are taking place, the U.S. has been involved in many elections, trying to see to what extent democracy can be carried out in individual countries. The question of elections is a big question in Africa. And that's the way it is, as I see, government and opposition in the world, and government and opposition in the United States, how they are all related because of the activism of politicians in Africa or in the United States.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nyang.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor William Eagle, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Fraser, and our engineers for today, Nick Ivanov and Casillas Martin, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, it is the same moon that wanes today that will be the full moon tomorrow. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Colombia is one of the most landmine-contaminated countries in the world. As part of a plan to bring a just and lasting peace to Colombia in the wake of more than 50 years of violence, the United States is co-leading with Norway the Global Demining Initiative for Colombia. Landmines and unexploded ordnance have killed or injured more than 11,000 Colombians over the past 25 years. Since 1993, the United States has invested more than $43 million in the clearance of landmines and unexploded ordnance in Colombia. Under the new initiative, the United States and Norway will expand support for Colombia's demining efforts and plan to provide an additional $33 million and $20 million, respectively, over the next 3 years toward humanitarian mine action and victims' assistance. The United States and Norway are rallying the international community to support Colombia's demining efforts. The initiative has become a truly global effort. Regional partners, Argentina, Chile, Uruguay, have joined, along with the European Union, Canada, Japan, Mexico, Slovenia, South Korea, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom. The goal of the initiative is to support Colombia's pursuit of its mine ban convention obligation to become mine-free by 2021. The United States continues to support Colombia's efforts to negotiate a just and lasting peace accord with the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC. 52 years of conflict and violence have killed more than 220,000 people and forcibly displaced more than 6 million. Last month, the United States co-sponsored UN Security Council Resolution 2261, establishing a monitoring and verification mission to be put in place following the signing of a peace agreement between the government of Colombia and the FARC. Colombians now have an historic opportunity to take important steps toward a future free from conflict, violence, and landmines. As the world's leading provider of technical and financial assistance for the clearance of explosive remnants of war, the United States looks forward to working with its partners to help ensure that Colombians can walk in peace and security.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.